meeting on this Tuesday, April 8th. We will start the committee meeting with a work session on House Bill 3094. And we have Representative Johnson here that we would invite to give us any information she has on the amendments.
Let me get in the right spot.
Oh, you're fine right there, Representative.
Would you like me to read it?
I'm at the disadvantage that I don't have the amendments in front of me.
But you will have by the time you get seated. Go ahead.
House Bill
3094.
House Bill 3094 allows direct retail sale of fish caught by a person holding commercial fishing license at any location.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand the amendments, that the purpose of the amendment was to limit this to a Columbia River pilot program and to have it try to take effect so as to be able to affect the fall fisheries.
Okay.
Ergo the emergency clause.
Okay. Are there any questions for Representative Johnson? Is there any further discussion or just other questions on House Bill 3094? Everybody happy? Representative Tomei?
Am I happy? I'm a little sleepy, Mr. Chair, but
well, that's okay. So
happy.
Am I. But that's, I mean, it's appropriate. We appreciate the early rise and the early hours. So.
So you mean, am I happy voting for the bill?
Yes.
Quick question. ODF&W. I don't recall if they came and testified on this. So, what did they have any issues?
ODF&W did testify at the last meeting. Peak Test County or County Committee Administrator, not County Clerk. No. They although they aren't here, and I hesitate to speak for them, they worked on these amendments, and in fact, they were quite adamant that we hurry and get this bill because they liked what they had.
Mr. Chair, for the record,
Johnson.
For the record, Betsy Johnson, Representative Dingfelder, we worked very closely with both Roy Elliker and Lindsey Ball, and they came and visited with me in my office. They're very pleased with these. They were particularly eager, though, to see this be a limited pilot program just to the Columbia River fishery, and I readily agreed with that. And they have been quite cooperative and exceptionally helpful in developing both the bill and the amendments.
It's fine. Thank you.
Is there any other? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll. The chair will close, or not, no.
And you've got a work session.
We are in work session. My apologies. We won't close the work session. We do, however, have a dash one amendments, and I need a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 3094.
Representative Dingfelder moves the adoption of the dash one amendments to House Bill 3094. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt House Bill 3094 with the dash one amendments.
Representative Dingfelder moves
recommendation
that we move House Bill 3094 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll or at this step.
Representative Flores.
Excuse.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. House Bill 3094 will move to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. And would you like to do the honors for us, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be very pleased.
Representative Johnson will be the carrier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. You were exceptionally courteous, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate your hard work on this bill. Okay. At this point, we... I know. The chair will open a public hearing on House Bill 3261. And Mr. Teft, if you'll tell us what 3261 is all about, why we can.
Authorizes drainage districts to establish board of supervisors with 3 or 5 supervisors. Establishes procedure for board of supervisors of existing drainage district to change number of supervisors on the board.
Okay. And we currently have only 2 people signed up for House Bill 3261. And it looks like you may be together, Tim Warren and Dick Schaffer. Is that correct? Would you, somehow or another, this one doesn't look like either Tim or Dick, but please sign up. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, I'm not either Dick or Kim, and I represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We represent over 900 special districts, local governments here in Oregon, and one of those districts does happen to be the Multnomah County Drainage District. And with me today, I have Tim Warren and Dick Schaefer, both from the Multnomah County Drainage District, here to tell you about this bill and why it's important to them and to our other drainage districts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Tim Warren, and I'm the president of the Board of Supervisors for the Multnomah County Drainage District, number 1 in Portland. I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 3261, creating the ability to, for a drainage district board to increase its size from 3 to 5 members. The reason for the support we're considering is because we are considering consolidating 4 drainage districts in Portland, the Multnomah County Drainage District, Peninsula Number 1, Peninsula Number 2, and the Sandy Drainage District. And it would be prudent to have representation from all those boards in a consolidated board of 5 members. Another positive outcome from having an increased board member size is that because our boards are volunteer in nature, it gives us the ability to spread the workload to 5 folks instead of 3, and we're also hoping that maybe 5 heads are better than 3 as well. So thank you very much for your consideration.
Any questions?
I do have a question.
Yes, please. Mr. Hoffman.
Are the quorum rules with 3 the same as all the other public entities?
I believe so.
So it really presents an incredible problem, I'd imagine. So makes sense to me. Thank you.
I just have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, since you're my drainage district. Why was it set up at 3 originally? What's the history? I'm just curious because it's an awfully small.
Yeah, the drainage district was created in 1917, so it was probably the good old boys down at the bar decided that was the appropriate amount. So I'm not sure of the actual.
What's wrong with that?
Well, we've been trying to figure that out ourselves. Yeah,
okay. And it has a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
It hasn't been an issue up until now. I'm sort of surprised that it hasn't arisen as a challenge prior to.
Well, it does complicate our lives a little bit in terms of wanting to get together to discuss issues and having to do the public disclosure and open meetings law issues. So it'll help in that area as well.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? No. Mr. Schaffer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Schaefer. I am a director for Peninsula Drainage District Number 2, which is also in concert with Multnomah Drainage District and I just wanted to come down and voice my support of this bill for the reasons that Mr. Warren identified to help us in the future in the running of perhaps one district versus four and to streamline and help share the workload of non-paid directors. Thank you.
Other questions? And if I may, help me with this. Currently, you're limited to three directors.
Is that correct? Yeah.
And the desire is to increase to five.
That's correct.
And you don't find that you have enough trouble finding three people who are willing to serve on a particular unpaid board. So in order to complicate your lives further, you wish to increase that to five people? You need two more to find for you?
Yes, sir. Our work isn't challenging enough, and so it is a challenge to go find those folks, and it's right at the top of my list of priorities is to find those. And
I see. Well, that's very, very, very kind of you to be willing to take on that extra responsibility. I mean, I guess I have, you know, relatively little familiarity with drainage districts, and as a consequence, I am curious as to whether it is difficult to find people who are. I mean, I know volunteer boards wind up being more work than people sometimes think they're going to be.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's true. It does, and the Multnomah County Drainage District is a very important drainage district. Of course, it serves 26 miles up and down the Columbia Corridor. Our biggest customer is the Portland Airport, which would be underwater most of the year if not for the work that the district does in maintaining the dikes and the slough system. So there's a lot of important work as well as environmental work that's going on in the slough, cleanups, environmental restoration and whatnot. So it's a big job. It's a big mission. We're protecting over $10 billion worth of real estate. So we need...
How many fish are you protecting?
There aren't many salmon jumping over the dike into the slough, but...
Well, what happens when you dump?
Well, actually, there is very little or no dumping that's going on in the slough. It's been protected pretty well, and it's getting better all the time.
Okay.
But it's basically a big bathtub where all the rainwater from about a third of the city of Portland drains into, and all that is then pumped over the dike into the Columbia River.
No treatment?
There's no treatment.
That's part of what we're now facing is that we are trying to create some treatment of the water through our conveyance ditches. It used to be we would scoop out the ditches. They would be just a V channel. At this point, we're trying to create benches, create fauna and plant life that will help filter out some of the contaminants that do get into the storm system. And so part of what all of this is, as Tim alluded to, is trying to get and spread a little bit of the burden of managing the districts, because instead of just pumping water and digging ditches, we now are faced with environmental concerns, building concerns. It used to be primarily an industrial environment, and now we have a number of residential developments that are in. And with that comes a need for more information, more cooperation, and an awareness for the environment that in the past, quite honestly, wasn't necessary, and now is a standard practice to think, how can we improve this water before we pump it? And so the practices of the drainage districts are reflecting that effort and concern for the environment. And so, yes, that's part of the issue that we're looking at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to note that there's been a lot of work, because the slough is in my district, and I work very closely with the Columbia Slough Watershed Council, mm-hmm. both the city, DES, which I'm assuming you work very closely with, and the Watershed Council do a lot of work in the slough, and there's been millions and millions of taxpayer dollars that has been spent on cleaning it up, and I'm assuming you work very closely with the city and the Watershed Council on any work that you do.
Yeah, that's correct. As a matter of fact, one of our the things that are in front of us is a master plan for the district that we're currently in the process of working through, and that's part of the looking at consolidating the four districts and then deciding a plan that you know doesn't just take individual pieces of land into consideration, but looks at the whole watershed as a big entity. And there are several programs that we, like you said, that we're doing in conjunction with BES, City of Portland, and other jurisdictions, along with the Watershed Council. And you know, it's a very complex problem these days. And there's a lot of really great things that are happening, that are going on. As a landowner that has about 2,000 feet of frontage along the slough, as we've developed some industrial land, there are programs where we worked with BES and the CREW at-risk youth groups to enhance and create more wetlands within the slough, and at the same time creating a balance for jobs and industrial growth along the side of the slough. So working together to really make a win-win for both sides of the equation. So we take our job very seriously, and so it isn't as hard to recruit, Mr. Chair, people to join the board, because there are some very passionate people, both on the business side and on the environmental side, that want to do good work for the district.
Do you do you try to maintain some balance between the business side and the environmental side?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Is there some rule you have, or is there some concentrated effort, or exactly how do you do that?
Well, we don't usually need to make up any new rules. There's plenty of rules out there to follow. It's a matter of cooperation and getting the different players together in a room and really helping everyone come to an understanding that we're really not competing against each other. It's figuring out how we can, all the sides can give each other what they need to move forward, both for the environment and for business and jobs and, you know, the balance of the economics and the environment. I don't know personally a bad developer that says, hey, what I want to do is go in and wreck the environment and build a parking lot. Most developers are nice people with families that want the same thing that both sides want, and so we work very hard to keep that balance, and we're finding a lot of partnerships and win-wins along that path.
Good. Are there any other questions on this bill? Please. Thank you very much. Appreciate your taking the time coming down this morning. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on House Bill 3261? Seeing none, we would close the public hearing on House Bill 3261 and open a work session on House Bill 3261.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Hearing no discussion, call the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. House Bill 3261 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
I move that we put 3261 on the consent calendar.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. I like consent calendar.
You do or do not?
Yes, I need to fill up.
Me too.
Okay. All right. Okay. With that, we will move on then to House Bill 2606. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2606. Mr. Tadst.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2606 defines terms for purpose of salmon and trout enhancement program, specifies the goal of the program to achieve recovery.
Okay. Is there any sign-up sheet on... Okay, we have Les Helgeson from the Native Fish Society. Les here?
I saw him lurking somewhere.
I saw him come in. I'll go see if he's outside.
We'll stand at ease for just a minute. Like to call the governor's office and ask Mr. Myron if he would like to come down and testify on 2606. Les, we're on 2606 and you're signed up to testify on. Good morning.
Good morning. Good timing.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is Les Helgeson with the Native Fish Society. I had to keep the meter person happy out there. So.
Not for long.
I've offered some proposed amendments to House Bill 2606 and have bracketed a portion that we will offer a second amendment, and I apologize for that. I just got this back from Ledge Council yesterday, so we will have that printed up formally, removing that section in the brackets. As I said, we will be offering another amendment, therefore, so I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have on this amendment.
I have a dash one amendment here.
Correct.
Is that the amendment that you're referring to?
Yes. I've handed out a copy with, under the definition of enhancement, we've bracketed out and not for purposes of commercial production. The intent is to delete that and leave the remainder is as it is. A key feature that we've amended in the original bill was the definition of recovery, which the intent here was to decouple it from the ESA listing process. I mean, it was never part of the intent of the STEP program, and we've modified that definition accordingly.
Where is your modification at?
On line 11, I believe it is, recovery 3 means ensuring that populations of naturally reproduced fish are sufficiently abundant, productive, and diverse in life histories and distribution that the populations will be self-sustaining into the future. There had been some additional language in the original bill tying that to... I think the intent was tied to ESUs and constituent populations that are listed and so forth. And I don't feel there's really a need to couple step with a ESA listing. It's, and the other definition for self-sustaining we have left as it is in the original bill.
Okay. Is any other questions or comments of Mr. Helgeson? Thank you very much, Fred.
Thank you, sir.
Did you get to hold mine? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on House Bill 2606, Mr. Bowles or the department? Yeah. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. My name is Ed Bowles. I'm the Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife supports House Bill 2606. The bill defines the terms recovery and self-sustaining for the purpose of the Salmon Trout Enhancement Program. We feel the definitions are consistent with the definition of recovery in House Bill 2138 and are consistent with implementation of our native fish conservation policy and state and federal Endangered Species Act requirements. STEP was created in 1981 and is a volunteer-based program with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and it seeks to rehabilitate and enhance the populations, habitat, and fisheries of native salmon and trout managed by the department through the involvement and education of citizens. We feel it's important that the definitions and the goals of this program be consistent with those within the native fish policy and the Oregon plan, which is where House Bill 2138 resides. I appreciate the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Ed, have you looked at the Dash 1 amendment?
What I have is just an embossed. I do not think I have seen the Dash 1 amendments.
Could you get Mr. Bowles a copy of the Dash 1 amendments, please?
Mr. Chair, is the only change to this the definition of enhancement?
Mm-hmm. That may be a major change, though, might it not, Ed?
The brackets in this hand-embossed, the bold definition enhancement are the brackets in this. What you'd like me to comment on, Mr. Chair, or the full definition of enhancement?
How the whole thing fits in. Or have you had sufficient time to analyze that here?
I have not, Mr. Chair. I would just mention that the STEP program provides very valuable contribution, not only educational side, but also in restoring and rehabilitating populations, not just for the sake of naturally produced population, but also to support fisheries through the process of healthy populations in the watersheds. I would hope that whatever the definition lands on here would incorporate that fact that STEP provides value to the fish and fishing.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Bowles? Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you.
And Fred Vanetta. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I am Fred Vanetta, appearing before you on behalf of the Oregon Anglers, a sports fishing group in the state. We would ask that we don't want to stand in the way of legislative progress, but we'd like a chance to look at those amendments and give them some thought. So we would hope you would not take final action on the bill today until we have a chance to get a copy of the amendments and review them, and we'll report back.
Okay. All right. Questions for Mr. Vanetta?
Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Just as a, you know, for the, I guess we're on the mic, so it has to be for the record. The record here, it is not the chair's intention to move this bill forward today. This bill is closely tied to House Bill 2138, and until we have all of the bugs worked out of House Bill 2138, it would be inappropriate to, in the chair's opinion, to move this bill forward. But we did want to have the public hearing on it so that we're ready as we get down to the final hours that we're rapidly approaching for committee hearings, and can make our movement very quickly at that point. So if there's nothing else, Representative Cruz.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just for the record, I think I have some of the concerns with this one I have with 2138, and it appears, and I'm sure it's not intentional, but it appears that the language here, as with 2138, puts hatchery fish in a second chair, and that concerns me.
Okay. Other comments on House Bill 2606? Hearing none, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2606, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3249. Mr. Test.
House Bill 3249 allocates $30 million of unobligated net proceeds from state lottery for financial support of modernization and repair of salmon hatcheries. Declares emergency effective July 1, 2003.
Okay. We have a little more action, apparently an interest on House Bill 3249 this morning. We'd start out with Wayne Geese. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Wayne Geese, and I served on the Native Fish Conservation Policy Task Force. I support House Bill 3249 for the following reasons. Number one, the improved fisheries along the Oregon coast has greatly improved the coastal economy beyond belief. Number two, we know the increase of fish numbers was mainly caused by ocean conditions. Three, to maintain the fish numbers, I believe best science hatcheries will be required. Four, this funding will enable ODF&W to operate a scientific hatchery at Fall Creek on the LC. This scientific study is needed for future coho runs. Number five, with the Oregon economy and jobs so depressed, this investment would be economic stimulus. And I thank you for this opportunity to express my views.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
I will supply to you here in the near future, and I'll direct it to you, Mr. Chairman, a copy of a petition that 10 of the scientists that are retired and are rather notable that have something to say about the hatchery fish. And I think you'd find that most interesting, and maybe Noah might approve that application. Thank you kindly.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Geese? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We have Dennis Ritchie then. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dennis Ritchie. I am the Executive Director of Oregon Anglers, and our office is in Westland. With this bill, you truly have an opportunity to help the economy of this state. Recreational fishing is one of the bright spots of the Oregon economic scene during this downturn. According to a survey from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, released in January of 2003, anglers spent $601.8 million on angling in 2001. And actually, in 2002, the number of fishing licenses has increased over that. So the amount of money should have gone up for 2002. The breakdown: food and lodging, almost $100 million. Transportation, almost $85 million. Other trip costs, which include guide fees, land use fees, access permits, and equipment rental, $74.2 million. And other expenses, which would include magazines, membership dues, contributions, stamps, and permits, $97.4 million. The remaining amount, which is approximately $300 million, is attributable to fishing tackle and equipment of that sort. My wife looked at that figure this morning, and she said, "Well, you're accounting for a good proportion of that, aren't you? That puts a lot of other anglers off the hook." Oregon in 2001 sold 689,669 fishing licenses, and of those, 172,003 were out-of-state licenses. The money brought into this state wasn't really estimated by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but this was all without the benefit of any interstate advertising that would bring more tourism in due to sports fishing. So what has this got to do with this bill? Oregon's tourism is really one of the few remaining bright spots during this economic downturn. The timber industry used to be our main source of revenue for this state, and it's a mere shadow of what it used to be. Commercial fishing now produces and contributes less than 10% of the amount that sports fishing does to the economy of Oregon. High tech was supposed to take up the slack. High tech is in a major downturn, and several of the high tech companies that we brought in have abandoned the state, so they certainly won't contribute to any comeback. But sports fishing has increased dramatically since 2000, and the improvement in ocean conditions is one of the main factors, and it contributed primarily to salmon and steelhead fishing. The jewel of Oregon fishing is really the salmon and steelhead fishing. People come to Oregon from all over the country and foreign countries to fish coho at Buoy 10, the huge Fall Chinook in Tillamook Bay, and the Springers throughout the state in southern Oregon, the Willamette and the Columbia Rivers. And I know a number of Alaskan guides that even come down to Oregon to fish for steelhead because they don't have any in Alaska. Oregon residents are also now rediscovering the joy of catching a 12-pound steelhead or a 25-pound Chinook and taking it home for dinner. Where do these fish come from? Hatcheries. Hatcheries are critical to maintaining recreational and commercial fishing in the Pacific states, according to Dr. Don Ammond, PhD in fisheries. Over 70% of the salmonoids caught in Oregon were originally from hatcheries, and a much larger percent of those that you can keep. Over 80% of the trout caught in Oregon were of hatchery origin. In a study done by ODFW, the economy of the state received $10 in return for every dollar spent on trout hatcheries. And hatchery salmon and steelhead are responsible for much greater fishing expenditures than trout fishermen. In comparison, the proposed dredging of the Columbia is forecast to return just $1.71 for every dollar spent by Oregon. But our hatchery system is in serious trouble. The average age of our hatcheries is over 60 years. Some hatcheries are so decrepit that staff can no longer live on site. At several facilities, raceways in which the smolts are raised are cracked, and they lose so much water that they can't use those particular raceways. Water pumps, hatching facilities, and many more components need work that's been deferred for over 8 years. As these facilities continue to deteriorate, it can only get more expensive to do the complex job of changing to local brood stock to fit in with the wild population. If we really want stocks that are genetically identical to the wild population, we must bring these hatcheries up to par. a major recommendation of the 2002 report by four eminent scientists and sponsored by the National Science Foundation and ODFW states, hatchery programs must target local stock as the source for recovery and enhancement. With this prerequisite, second-generation hatchery fish originating from local stock will be most similar to wild stock. A recent assessment, oh, by the way, on that report, I have a printer printing out those booklets, and I would like to deliver one to each member of this committee. I tried to get another case of them from Idaho, and the Center for Salmonid Research at the University of Idaho had run out of their budget for printing, but the four authors gave me permission to go ahead, print and distribute those copies, and I will do so hopefully within the week, according to the printer schedule. A recent assessment of minimal needs put the deferred maintenance costs, and this is different than on your copy because Mr. Bowles updated me on the new figures, deferred maintenance costs at $13.7 million. A modest estimate of modernization costs was set at $24.2 million, and the much-needed research hatchery setting at Fall Creek on the Alsea River was at $7 million, but there is a possibility of getting some federal grant money for that, so it will not, we probably won't need the full $7 million, but we do need money to get that off the ground. Please remember that the trend that shows large economic increases to the state by sports fishers over the past 3 years will certainly reverse if these hatcheries are closed one by one because of neglect. This bill meets the definition of economic development. Lottery dollars are currently delegated to economic development. An investment in our hatchery system will not only give us an immediate return, but will go on giving back to the state for decades. Unless we invest in the areas that bring in tax dollars to the state, there will be fewer dollars available for education and human resources. We urge you to help keep this key part of Oregon's economy in working order, and also keep over 500,000 Oregon fishermen and boaters happy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Question for Dennis this morning. Thank you, Dennis. Phil Donovan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning,
members of the committee. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association and the 17 chapters of the Northwest Steelheaders. You can see that we're sponsors of this legislation along with the Oregon Anglers. And Dennis has gotten up and frankly stolen all of my thunder. He's very well articulated the scope of the legislation, the reasons why it was brought forward.
Phil, that means you got to get here earlier.
I was right on his heel, sir.
Okay.
Just to share a few thoughts. First off, as you can see, there's broad support within the angling community for legislation such as this, as you look at who's sponsoring this legislation. And frankly, angler support for our hatcheries across the state is overwhelming, as evidenced by the hearings that were held about the Department of Fish and Wildlife's budget during the interim process. Take, for example, the Tillamook public hearing. It set out 250 chairs. It was standing room only. There is a lot of support for that. But when you consider that Tillamook meeting, there were within 30 miles of that meeting, there were three hatcheries that have got considerable deferred maintenance issues, one of which is Cedar Creek Hatchery. It's got some water quality issues that's led to the shutdown of some of the raceways, limiting production. If you consider the Trask River Hatchery right there, they've got condemned housing. They can't even put their people on the site as they were intended. The place is just wrapped in yellow tape, I imagine. So You know, we wanted to bring forward this legislation because it helps to define the scope of the problem, the range of issues that are facing our hatcheries. And we feel that there are some very compelling reasons to move it forward. Obviously, Dennis spoke a lot about the importance of economic development. Successful sport fisheries help retailers, they help tackle manufacturers, they help individual fishing guides, they help the tourism industry that supports many of our rural communities. And frankly, it does it right in downtown Portland as well. Right now we're seeing a tremendous run of spring Chinook that are returning, and if you look at the Columbia all the way up to Bonneville, if you look at downtown Portland all the way up to Oregon City, there are fishermen and people who are making a living at the success of these sport fisheries, and that Willamette Run and that Columbia Run that we're fishing on exists only because of our ability to fish selectively for hatchery fish. Another benefit that I thought it worthwhile to bring forward too is also the fact that we're making infrastructure investments here, and these create good family wage jobs by making an investment such as this. So hence why we've made a request of lottery monies to fund this program. Modernizing our hatchery facilities can also help wild fish. One limitation to the broodstock programs that we see is the size of the raceways that exist right now. If we're able to go in and modernize, we can retrofit these facilities so that we have greater flexibility in the types of programs that can be managed at our hatcheries. And so not only do we patch up broken concrete and fix the leaks, as was previously referred to, but we create a better environment for raising a diversity of hatchery fish, which is a big problem when we consider this hatchery fish versus wild fish. It's bringing diversity to the hatchery fish populations. Finally, I would just point out that we can appreciate the difficult financial situation of the state right now. It is our belief, however, that these economic development investments are an important component of recovery. The statutory obligations that are before you, as you consider the budgets right now, is that lottery monies can be used for education and economic development. And as you're considering the economic development portion of the lottery budget, we hope that this legislation can be in front of the Ways and Means process for due consideration. So we'd ask that you move this legislation along and it's right. So appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Phil. Any questions for Mr. Donovan? I've got a happy committee this morning.
We're still asleep, Mr. Chair.
Still asleep. Oh, God. The committee needs to look carefully at their Thursday schedule and observe that it's a 5 a.m. schedule.
You won't be so happy.
You think you're early?
Works for me.
Well, that works for me, too. Representative Cruz and I will be here. Okay. At this point, Mr. Bowles with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. You brought reinforcement.
Thanks again, Chair Jensen and members of the committee. My name is Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have with me John Thorpe, who's our relatively new Fish Propagation Program Manager for the department. And I'll provide a brief testimony, and then he's here to answer any of your tough questions that you might have. We don't have a position on House Bill 3249, but I wanted to just provide some additional background information for your consideration. As you're aware, the bill would provide up to $30 million to the department for modernization and repairing of our fish hatchery facilities. We're in the process of finalizing a report to the Ways and Means Committee that will be presented during those deliberations the week of April 21st. But preliminary estimates from that report are that there are $13.7 million in deferred maintenance needs and another $24.2 million needed for some of the improvements. These do not include costs of upgrading some of our fishways to bring them into compliance with federal codes, nor does it include the money required to do the Fall Creek Hatchery Research Center that many of you have been talking about with us during the session. So protecting Oregon's existing hatcheries through investment in remodeling as well as modernization is considerably less expensive than construction of new facilities, and this is a point that hasn't yet been brought up this morning. For example, during the 80s, the cost to construct and equip new hatcheries under the Lower Snake River Compensation Plan ranged from $29 to $190 per pound of fish produced. In 93, the department prepared a report that used a conservative estimate of $50 per pound of fish produced. And at that price, the department's hatcheries would cost approximately $265 million to replace. The state hatchery system plays a significant part in providing economic benefits to the state, as you've heard from other testifiers. In 2001, 690,000 anglers took about 8.7 million days of fishing recreation in Oregon. Annual angler expenditures were $733 million, generating $23.3 million in taxes to the state general fund and $46.1 million in taxes to the federal general fund. So these are not small ticket items. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on this for your consideration.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bolt?
Can you look at me?
Well, I mean...
Actually, I did have one question regarding...
I was sure that you could...
Prioritization. Do you have a list, Ed, of needs? I mean, I'm assuming you do, because you came up with this number. Would it be possible to get a copy of that list? I'm assuming you have a ranking for all the hatcheries based on needs and how you came up with that this figure. The two figures that you have in deferred hatchery maintenance and the other one for needed hatchery improvements.
Chair Jensen and Representative Dingfelder, we do have this broken down by facility. We don't have it firmly prioritized within that, but they are there for consideration. If you'd like some of the details on it, I guess I'd ask that we're just finalizing a report on that, which we'll have just within a little over a week now a couple of weeks for the Ways and Means Committee, and at that time we will have the actual report ready. What we could do, if you'd like, is give you those numbers broken down off of those tables that we prepared, recognizing that it's still in final draft form.
That would be helpful.
Would you like that?
Mr. Chair,
Would you get those for the committee?
Yes, Chair. So that
Representative Domingue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us what proportion of the upkeep and the expense of the hatcheries is covered by license fees?
Chair Jensen, I knew there was a reason to bring John Thorpe here, so.
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, that's we have about...
For the record, John.
My name is John Thorpe. I'm the fishery fish propagation program manager. The number I think that you're trying to seek is our hatchery maintenance number, which is about $500,000 a year, or biennium. Not a particularly large amount of money, though, when you look at the amount of maintenance that has to be done in a given year.
So that's what the maintenance, if I may follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So that is what you're saying, the cost to maintain the hatcheries? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm sorry. Our estimate for maintenance of the facilities is closer to $2 million a year. For the state-funded facilities, we have available to us in a given year about between $250,000 and $500,000. And then R&E funds amount to about $800,000 biennium. So it's just about... $600,000 or $700,000 a year we have available to go against state-funded facilities.
And that comes from the licensing fees. That's what I'm asking.
How much? License fee piece is approximately $250,000 a year.
So the licenses pay
for a portion of the repair.
For a proportion.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Whoa, don't run away. I didn't think I was... I heard comments from Mr. Ritchie regarding the numbers, and I gathered from your testimony you generally concur with those dollar amounts.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if you're referring to the deferred maintenance numbers and the improvement numbers, correct.
Okay. What about the modernization numbers?
Yeah, I'm referring to those as the same as the improvements.
As the improvements, okay. On the deferred maintenance, how did we get so far behind?
Chair Jensen, that represents not, I mean, it's accrued over numerous years, basically, but a point that was brought out to me this morning by John was that this doesn't mean that some of these maintenance issues are in arrears decades. We're just the accumulated amount of money. We're prioritizing what we're doing each biennium based on the limited funds that we have. Some of these maintenance issues are recently a problem. Some are moving on a decadal scale. So
you're not answering my question, though. How did we get so far behind?
The simple fact that the maintenance costs exceed the amount of money available for maintenance.
Is that a legislative problem or executive department problem, or is that a management problem and not making that point well enough known?
Mr. Chair, I think what has happened is costs for hatchery programs have increased over time, and therefore we have been long-standing in a situation of maintenance of current operations, but costs of current operations have gone up without equivalent increases in budgets available to pay for those. And in that sort of situation, there has not been enhancement packages put into the budgets to take care of those inflationary items, as well as deterioration, you know, of facilities. You are correct on that.
This is not meant to poke at either department or the governing or legislative body, but merely to raise the awareness or put on the record that we, for whatever the reasons in the state of Oregon, have gotten a long ways behind the power curve on this, and if we don't take aggressive action to catch up, it is true that pretty soon the costs will exceed any possible benefit, either the fishing benefits or the economic benefits that we could derive from it. I mean, we simply can't postpone forever the maintenance and improvement costs that we have. And we'd like the record to basically so note that. So if there are no other further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And we have Mr. Helgeson, and that's the last witness I have on this bill, unless there are some others, in which case we could let staff know why we could. Good morning again, Les.
Good morning again, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Les Helgeson, here representing the Native Fish Society. Thomas Gilg, Vice President for Federation of Fly Fishers, has also asked me to represent their organization here today. If I might, I'd like to begin with some additional information on that last question you posed to Mr. Bowles, and I'll refer to list of cuts that were discussed at the initial meeting of the Ways and Means Committee. In this session, I'll read you this. Excuse me. Forget I need glasses here these days. Natural Resources, ODFW. Rescind appropriation of $2 million general fund to pay off outstanding debt owed by the department to the deferred maintenance account by past improper borrowing to meet cash flow needs.
I think that addresses in part some of your concerns.
Fairly ancient history, so covered that in previous areas. Go ahead.
It is a matter of the past, but it has gotten us to this point here today. Now, I want to address the economic issues here, and the bill states that 70% of the fish caught by the Oregonians are first-generation hatchery fish. That's perhaps accurate, but I think it's also accurate to point out that probably 70% of those are caught on the Columbia system. Buoy 10 and so forth. And most of these fish are federally funded hatcheries. For the most part, their deferred maintenance is zero. They've been taken care of by the feds. So this leaves us really, we're dealing with the coastal hatcheries in terms of this $30 million and these supposed economic benefits. I always say there's three Oregons when it comes to fisheries. There's the Columbia system, the Willamette, and the coast, and they're very different. Now, I'm not saying fisheries aren't important on the coast, but we have a different situation. This is where most of the deferred maintenance occurs. I'll point out some of the economic benefits locally that were done by a natural resources economist with expertise in this area. We'll look at the Trask hatchery, which provides a total economic contribution of $158,000. Well, the annual operating costs are $282,000. We're getting less than a dollar return. Salmon River, $222,000 in total economic contribution. Operating costs are $282,000. I don't think we're getting a very good return on our investment in hatcheries in those two cases. But an important point you need to consider is the Tillamook Bay fishery was mentioned. We have a wonderful run of fall Chinook there. That's 95% wild fish. The Nestucca River, same situation, but our run there is 100% wild fish. And you can keep those fish. There's no prohibition on taking wild fish for Chinook runs. The Nestucca River, again, the steelhead program, operating costs of roughly $500,000. The latest figures we had from the Secretary of State's office was there was a $2.5 million maintenance backlog at the time. Well, we have an annual run of roughly 10,000 steelhead, which with a conservative estimate, we could harvest 2,000 of those fish. The current hatchery program's contributing on average 1,000 to 1,500 fish per year. So is that an essential economic benefit from that hatchery? We could simply change the rules to allow harvest of these wild fish. So I wanted to point those economic issues out to you because we need to separate the Columbia and the coast and what's occurring. We're seeing recovery on the coast. That's our goal. It's happening. We need to foster that. And it's no coincidence that as we ratchet down the hatchery input, we're seeing the wild fish respond here. True ocean conditions are playing an important part, but it's not the only part. There's management issues we've been involved with for many, many years there now that are finally paying off. In addition, these lottery funds, I don't know, when I testified on the R&E bill here, Mr. Representative Schaffler, you mentioned roads and bridges crumbling, and if we... You know, should we just abandon them because they're crumbling? Well, no, we shouldn't. These are infrastructures that benefit all Oregonians, not just this 20%, and even actually it's 15% who are fishing for hatchery fish, if we accept that number is correct. According to the statutes pertaining to the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund, furthering economic development includes, but is not limited to, providing services for businesses and so forth, but also services for physical environments or infrastructure projects. So I'm not trying to say that hatcheries are prohibited, but we could be rebuilding those bridges, our roads. They're crumbling. We know that. Even if we double our registration fees, we're still going to be facing a significant shortfall for dealing with our transportation projects here. Our local school district is facing a $15 million deficit just in maintenance and upkeep stuff. The library in our middle school, you have to hold on. It's the floor is sloping the corner down. The building's literally crumbling. We don't have the money to fix these problems. And I ask you to consider facing your constituents when you choose to fund these fish hatcheries with some very limited benefits, when that money could be used for meeting more pressing needs in the way of schools, highways, and so forth. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Question for Mr. Helgeson.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Schaffer.
I don't have any questions.
Our Representative Schaffer.
That's okay. I don't have any questions, Mr. Helgeson, but if it would be okay with you, I would like Fish and Wildlife to come up here and respond to some of this. If we have the time.
But your wish is my command.
Oh, sure.
Don't be rubbing any bottles looking for genius.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Boy, that doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't bring his brains with it.
That's right, Chair Jensen.
Like a calculator.
Chair Jensen, Representative Schaffler, would you just in general, or do you have some specifics?
Well, the return on the investment at the three coastal hatcheries, the numbers that were thrown out, I didn't write them down. I apologize. Just in general, I mean, are the numbers that he used on the return per dollar invested in the three hatcheries he mentioned, do you think that's correct?
Chair Jensen and Representative Schaffler, I've not looked at Mr. Helgeson's specific numbers, but relative to the hatchery audit report that the Secretary of State office prepared, if that's where those came from as far as the cost for those facilities, that was done during a period of time that we've testified in Ways and Means on relative to a severe downturn in ocean conditions. So costs per fish were up significantly throughout the state relative to that. A little broader time horizon obviously would change those relative numbers, but I have not looked at Mr. Helgeson's numbers enough. That's where those came from. In general, we are moving towards a little better standardized way, and this came out of the audit report. One of the positive aspects are to try to standardize our metrics so that we can get at kind of apples to apples comparisons of costs over time for these facilities, so that we can take a cleaner look at economics provided by those. I did have a couple other things, Mr. Chair, that just to clarify, Mr. Helgeson brought up relative to the numbers in the deferred maintenance. There is significant deferred maintenance at our federal facilities. Just to clarify with respect to the state obligation, and once again, this will be brought out in our Ways and Means report, but just for state-funded hatcheries, if we're just looking at 100% state-funded hatcheries, it's approximately about $6 million in deferred maintenance of that $13 million. For just the state funded, and for hatchery improvements it's roughly $7 million for just the state component of that. So it's important to keep that in mind as far as any bailout considerations, that the full amount is not necessarily a state obligation.
May I follow up?
Yes, just so you all know, I do support this, and these numbers right here don't lie. We're getting a big return.
Do you think, though, on the coastal hatcheries, if the goal was to
bring back the runs that we had there. Do you see in the near future or the distant future those hatcheries no longer being necessary, as Mr. Halgeson, forgive me for mispronouncing your name, has seemed to have implied? Do you see that on the horizon, those hatcheries no longer being needed there? Or is there some, not just natural reason, but is there some economic reason to keep them as well, or any reason to keep them?
Chair Jensen and Representative Schaffler, both near-term and long-term, I think hatchery produced fish to provide fishing opportunities mm-hmm. will be in the state's future and an important part of its economy and recreational commercial opportunities. Having said that, though, I think the strength of that fishery should be based on the naturally produced fish. That is where the majority of our, quote, hatcheries reside. If you want to look at hatcheries holistically, there, we've got far more area out there to produce fish from the natural streams and rivers than we could ever hope to out of our facilities. And we should rely on that as the foundation for fisheries. But we also have an appetite for fisheries from our public that is legitimate and valued, and that can be best met through use of our hatchery programs responsibly within that. Hatcheries also provide, as you heard from Mr. Donovan, an opportunity to focus fisheries on fish that can sustain those levels of harvest while we're dealing with recovery issues. And without those, we would have to shut down our fisheries because there wouldn't be the ability to fish on these hatchery stocks. And so during the interim, it's vitally important to maintain those that differentiation. But even long term, they're going to play a role.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, not a comment, or not a question, more of a comment. There are folks who don't like hatcheries no matter what, period, and I have to admire their persistence in that opinion in light of facts to the contrary. You know, I think hatcheries will play a significant role in recovery. We already know that that's a doable thing. We've got a package coming to the floor soon to deal with bridges and roads. I think it's a good package. To assume that this $30 million solves the K-12 problem is rather absurd. So I think this is moving us in the right direction and addressing an issue that we have not taken appropriate responsibility for in the past. So I applaud you, Mr. Chair, for bringing this bill forward, and I hope it's going to move. And other than that, I would say to Representative Schaffler, a nice haircut. I'm always envious of people that have hair. So.
Thank you. Oh, boy, I don't know where that came from, but that's okay, Rick.
Mow my lawn, too.
I'll come down and do mine this weekend.
Speaker, those comments are not germane to the conversation.
I would think that's generally true, Representative. Yeah, I appreciate the first part of the comments, Cruz.
Well, it is a nice haircut.
I'd just simply like to ask one little question here, and that is, are we forgetting the non-salmonid role in the hatcheries and what would happen if to our trout production when we ignore the hatchery maintenance too?
Chair Jensen, our numbers do incorporate the hatchery trout production.
Yes, I know they do, Ed, but when we start throwing the numbers around, we have to remember that they're not just for...
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, yes.
They include a broader category than just...
That is correct.
...ocean-going fish. Yes, sir. Yeah, I had some other comments, but I think I'll take a rain check or something on those and let it go with that. Do I have anybody else signed up for this meeting? Is there anyone else wishing to testify on this? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on the House Bill 3249 and
Mr. Chair,
open.
Aubrey was just coming forward as we were talking about.
We'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3249.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Good morning, members. My name is Aubrey Russell. I'm with Oregon Trout. I'm sorry I haven't been able to prepare testimony today. I was here until late last night. I wanted to respond to comments made by Mr. Donovan to the effect that hatcheries play an important role in recovery of fish, and Representative Cruz has also referred to this. And I wanted to state on the record that we have been trying to recover fish using hatcheries for quite some time. We have now a better idea of what might be achievable. We have ideas of how to reform hatcheries, and we heard that in order to reform hatcheries, we're going to have to invest a significant amount of money, which wasn't included in the two figures that were given today. Mr. Bowles indicated that in order to bring hatcheries up to a state of technology where they can be useful in recovery, that would require sizable investment. To my knowledge, we know that there isn't money contemplated to make that investment, that money is not available. This $30 million would not go beyond simply correcting maintenance and backlog issues. So I want to express Oregon Trout's concern with the idea of moving ahead too quickly down a path which is unproven and based on an indecision on a policy level and a lack of commitment on the agency level to some concepts which are taken for granted by some people. And I would like to point out that this committee I understand that there's a place for debate, but this committee seems divided itself on the policy issues regarding the difference between hatchery and wild fish, and given what we believe to be the state's obligation to protect wild fish, we would urge some hesitancy in moving too quickly down the road of investing in hatcheries when we don't know what the agency's future management will produce in terms of impacts on those wild runs. So I agree entirely with Mr. Bowles that the strength of the fishery the strength of our fisheries will depend on naturally produced fish. God has created a vast natural fish production facility, and we should make full use of that, realizing that hatcheries sometimes, when they are placed on top of wild runs, are not an aid to production but are actually counterproductive. And we've seen that repeatedly, and it's pointed out that I pointed out earlier that we've been using hatcheries for a century now, and we have documented that counterproductive effect. So I'm not saying they can't be used correctly, but we haven't made that commitment yet, and we don't have the monies available to make that a reality. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Question. I'm not sure we've documented the adverse effects. I'm not sure always of, you know, where all of these documentation, you know, is coming from. And I would caution us to be careful, you know, with this. I don't know whether we know or not, but there is a reasonable hypothesis, I suppose, that could be made that we wouldn't have any wild fish if it hadn't been for the hatcheries by the time we get to this point in our history. And if a wild fish is something that goes back to the time of Jonah or Noah or someone else, there's probably no such thing anymore as a quote-unquote pure wild fish, like there is no such thing anymore as a quote-unquote pure Norwegian or any other.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond, and I would urge you to invite NOAA, National Marine Fisheries, now NOAA Fisheries, if he's available. And ask them about there are people, there are many people who devote their careers to studying fish and the differences between fish populations and as you know, the federal government has documented the differences between various populations of fish and
as you probably know, Audrey, there are some of us who have take serious exception to the methodologies and the documentations that may have taken place by some of the agencies in both the federal and state governments.
I think there was one other point, if I may, Mr. Chair, that you were, I think, initially talking to, and that's the perhaps the management of hatcheries historically and how they may or may not have impacted or benefited wild fish, and I think the fact that we are now talking so much about hatchery reform and creating conservation hatcheries, which isn't really a reality on the ground yet, but I think that our commitment to learning more about that and eventually implementing those practices is an acknowledgement of the importance of correct management practices and the impact that hatcheries have had historically because of their poor management. And I agree with you that the impact of hatcheries has been so widespread as to constitute a real tragedy for Oregon's wild fish production. But I disagree to the extent that you might suggest that it's been complete and therefore the issue is resolved. There are existing limited isolated populations where we have those historic populations.
Thank you. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3249 and open a work session on House Bill 3249.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cruz.
I move House Bill 3249 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a D-pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves the House Bill 3249 to the floor with a D-pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Do you want to go to the floor?
That's the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, I've been doing it wrong all these years?
No. Damn.
What?
That'll go. That's what you learn when you get the judiciary. Other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, this sounds like
Representative Tomei.
A very
much
admirable bill. And in better financial times, I would be voting for it. I think it's all the testimony we've heard seems to indicate that it's a much needed bill, and it would certainly help Oregon's economy. But because of the state of our economy, I will not be able to support this bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to support this piece of legislation. I think that one of the interesting conundrums of our time is that for some reason, during this most severe recession in this state, lottery revenues are up a lot. People seem to be gambling more on lottery. Go figure. They can't feed themselves, but they're buying more lottery tickets for some reason. At any rate, there's more money available to us now to use lottery dollars in its original intent. I might remind everyone in this room, was not for education, wasn't for parks, wasn't for salmon. The original use of lottery dollars was to stimulate our economy. That's why we put a lottery in. And it seems to me that this is clearly an economic stimulus, a positive impact for rural Oregon. This doesn't do much for downtown Portland, obviously, or downtown Eugene or Salem. It really impacts rural communities tremendously. And I go back to the same old mantra, Mr. Chair, is that Oregon is a very diverse state in many ways, and the rural parts of the state simply did not enjoy the great boom years of the 90s as most of our urban areas of the state did. In fact, there's been a very real decline there, unfortunately. And I think this is a proper and appropriate use of dollars, lottery dollars, increased lottery dollars made available to us for economic development. And we ought to be looking at doing this for the health of rural economies, in addition to all the other good reasons that have been articulated here today. And I would say that if we can do this, Mr. Chair, then I would also ask that you all consider favorably another bill that I have, not coming to this committee, but actually in my committee, that also helps rural economic development, is using a small amount of lottery funds to help us build rural slaughterhouses for the meat industry in Oregon, because we don't have any anymore of any substance that can process Oregon meat. Now, what does that have to do with this bill? Nothing other than the concept is the same of using lottery resources to stimulate the economy, especially in rural Oregon, which has simply been left behind. That's why this is a good bill, and that's why we need to vote it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Thank you. I support in concept what this is trying to accomplish. I agree with Representative Tomei that this is a difficult economic time, but I think Representative Krupp makes some legitimate discussion in regard to lottery, its initial concept, the funding that's now occurring as a result of its growth, perhaps not the rest of our economy. So I will be supporting this and let Ways and Means determine if it is there is a way or mean to implement it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to follow up on Representative Flores, I mean, the purpose, this committee is supposed to make a judgment on the policy, not the funding. The funding happens in Ways and Means. So,
thank you, Representative. That was, the point that I wanted to make, is that Ways and Means is the body that or part of the body that determines how the dollars go out. This is an important, I think, policy issue, and even and I have no idea what Ways and Means is going to do with it at this particular point. Regardless of that, in the chair's opinion, it's the responsibility of the committee to keep this policy issue in front of the body. Regardless of what happens this year or this biennium or with this particular legislative session, we have an issue here that is important to the state, and it needs to be kept in front of us, and to fail to pass the bill, I think, would jeopardize that policy issue. And so, therefore, no further discussion. The roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Dingfelder.
Excuse.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. Having received the appropriate vote, House Bill 3249 will be going to Ways and Means for their consideration. And with that, we want to open a work session on House Bill 2459. We're backing up a little bit. Refresh our memories on 2459, if you would, Mr.
Dass. Okay. House Bill 2459 requires hatchery fish bred from wild stocks be considered wild fish and allowed to spawn. Requires hatchery populations to be from wild fish.
Mr. Chair,
you like this better?
I'll move House Bill 2459 to the floor with a due pass. So we've got a motion on the table.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. Representative Cruz moves House Bill 2459 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cruz.
You know, this gets us back into really some of the same issues we've been discussing in the last bill, and that is the role of hatcheries in the recovery process. And I understand, Mr. Chair, that your bill was designed more to deal with maybe a more specific area, but you know, the argument that we have had bad hatchery practices over time is not accurate, number one, because for a long time hatcheries were designed for one thing, and that was produce fish for people to catch. The science at that point in time is what it was, and we were being scientifically appropriate, I think, from the perspective we were working on. When we started getting into ESA issues with salmon, hatcheries were looked at as a way to augment the dwindling populations, and at that point in time, the argument made against hatchery fish was that there was a genetic difference between the fish being produced in hatcheries and the native fish in the runs, and to some degree that was true, because of the dynamic of what hatcheries were supposed to be doing. We have over time, however, in some hatcheries, and especially in the Native American hatcheries, gone to a different modality, and that is using wild crosses to produce our hatchery fish. And the argument was still for genetic difference until that argument was totally debunked, and then suddenly the argument became that they were behaviorally different. But nobody has been able to prove that you know, they come to the top to feed rather than dive when they see shadows, that sort of thing. But nobody can prove, and I don't think it is provable, because it's not true that genetic coding transfers in one generation. We had, at that point in time, it was National Marine Fisheries, now NOAA Fisheries, but last session in your committee, Mr. Chair, we had them in, and they basically said on the record that if we have wild crosses in hatcheries and those fish come back upstream and spawn, that they would consider those to be native fish. So we already have the federal government on record as saying that this is something they would accept. So for us to have a policy that goes in another direction, it just doesn't make any sense. Now, I know there are objections to this, and I know the department has problems, but what really puzzles me is this is the direction they say they're going, and yet they can't support a bill that takes us there. And it's been a frustration for me for a while, and I think this is common sense. And every now and then, I think it's nice to actually put common sense in law.
Thank you, Representative Cruz. Are there other comments?
Well, I may as well. I will be voting no, and it's because I can't
determine what a wild fish or a hatchery or the difference between the two any more than I can a pure Norwegian or an unpure Norwegian. And we can make all the laws we want. And with all due respect to Representative Cruz, we can make all the laws we want, but there's a long, ugly history of making laws that we thought were good and allowing things that we thought were good and ended up not being so good. And I there's no way I can support it because I'm just not sure. And I know if you don't vote on anything because you're not sure, you're never going to be voting on anything, period. But this is a very touchy issue, and right now I'm not ready to move ahead on this myself personally, and that's what my vote will reflect that. But thank you.
Representative Krupp.
Mr. Chair, I would just say to the good representative next to me here, Representative Schaffler, that we're both German crosses. And I still claim a significant portion of my blood lineage from my German heritage. And it's kind of similar to what we're trying to talk about here. I think Representative Cruz actually brings up the salient point, is that the federal government clearly would accept this as a reasonable premise and idea. And that, I think, is getting at the heart of the issue. If you take, especially with the great new idea that they have for a conservation hatchery that mimics nature, that's where you really get to this point where you take a wild stock and you put it in a conservation hatchery that has gravel and streams and all those elements in it that nature does, and it would seem to me that those are wild fish, and especially if they come back and spawn. And so I think this is a good concept. I think we should move it forward, advance the argument, advance the debate, and continue to have it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I have several concerns. One of them is the NFCP task force was established by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in response to an executive order for the purpose of reviewing wild fish management policy. And this task force was composed of a broad spectrum of interests, as we all know, including conservation, industrial, agricultural, fishing, property rights interests. And a professional facilitator was employed at the cost of, I think, over $25,000 to implement this process. And this bill would void that policy and require the department to begin this process all over again, at, again, an unknown cost to taxpayers. And I think that is not being productive. I think it's being counterproductive, and I will be voting no on this also.
Thank you. Other comment? Okay. The roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
No.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Ingsalter.
Excuse.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Chair
Gensler. Aye. I don't suppose you'd like to carry it.
Oh, yeah.
House Bill 2459, having received a majority vote, is declared passed, and Representative Cruz will be the carrier, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2459 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3555. And Mr. Tech.
House Bill 3555 authorized state treasurer to issue revenue bonds to be paid for from fees received by the State Department of Fish and Wildlife from issuing licenses, tags, and permits to angle for fish. Specifies that bond proceeds be used to pay for hatchery capital projects.
Mr. Chair, as the chief co-sponsor of the legislation, I would just like to say that Ken Evans is here, who actually brought this concept to me and you and other members, that this again gets to the heart of the issue of how do we, since we have this enormous investment in hatcheries and they have this enormous impact in our rural communities, how do we do things like the capital cost of the conservation hatchery idea that I've just spoken about? Great concept. Think we need to move forward with it. And this is maybe one way that we get a little further down that road. So with that, I'm not going to jinx this bill by speaking anymore and ask Ken, who's got his young son with him today, playing Dr. Dad or Mr. Dad. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
That would be great. Thank you. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. Thanks for the introduction, Representative Prep. I've got some testimony here I want to make available. Excuse me here, first of all. I understand the committee has discussed another bill that we are supporting as well, and kind of, I think, gone over this issue quite a bit. I submitted some testimony that you can read at a later date. Representative Krupp made a good point, I believe. One of the concerns that we have, and I was involved like others in this Native Fish Conservation Task Force policy, as well as the hatchery policy rule, we don't invest in our infrastructure, whether it's this bill, this idea, other ideas out there. We're not going to be able to take advantage of all the good work that was done by the numerous people that were involved and groups involved with the Native Fish Conservation Task Force. So my, I guess, bottom line in my statement is, if it's not this, what? And if not now, when? It's going to take us 6 to 10 years, even if you were to, and the Ways and Means Committee was kind enough to give us the money this year sometime or this next biennium. By the time the hatcheries are one, some, you know, identified, and there is a policy that, or excuse me, a budget note last session that this body gave the department to identify the hatcheries and the deferred maintenance issue, look into the modernization issue, and develop a plan and strategy. So this dovetails real nicely with that issue. But even at that point, if we do immediately jump into it, we're looking still 6 to 10 years down the road before we see any benefits. So if this gets put on the table again for another session, and this is my 7th full-time session on behalf of sports fishermen and dealing with this issue, we're quite a few years out. So I would appreciate if this committee would be kind enough to send it to Ways and Means, allow that body to crunch the numbers with the budget, and make a recommendation. I believe the department needs additional tools, and I'm not trying to cram this down the department's throat or anybody's throat. And I support 3249 and the good gentlemen and the groups that are involved with that, along with us. If you'd be kind enough to give us $30 million in economic development fund, I'd be happy to pull this bill in a heartbeat. But I don't believe that's going to happen, so we need to find a solution. I believe that the debt service, that they spend about $2 million annually on hatchery maintenance. What isn't done during the biennium or during that course of the year gets put into this proverbial deferred maintenance account. That's ever-growing. So next session, when we come back here, that's not going to be $13 million. It's going to be, you know, $15-something, let alone modernizing our hatcheries. And to me, I think that's the way we're going. Representative Jensen and many of you in the committee have folks that are involved with the tribal groups that are doing a wonderful job taking advantage of some of the new science and technology, and I would like to give our department that same opportunity. So, in conclusion, I'd like to thank everybody and ask the committee to pass this out with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Evans?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ken, I haven't looked at this very thoroughly, so I apologize for that. But tell me how revenue bonds work.
Well, I've done quite a bit of research, but Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, I would I would hate to kind of get into the technical aspects of it. I have spoken, and I believe Harrison Conley from Legislative Council would be happy to. Matter of fact, we've already prepped him. I've already talked with, I believe, Kate Richardson from the Treasurer's Office, Chief of Staff, who was going to have somebody. So I've made arrangements for have if technical questions. My understanding.
I think this is
the gentleman that could answer.
Thank you,
Mr. Evans. Questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Evans, the chair will exercise the as who comes to the
oh,
table, who
excuse
does
me.
Not.
You, please. Excuse me, Chair. Sorry.
Yes, Harrison, please.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members. Harrison Conley from the Office of Legislative Counsel. Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, I was asked to be here and to make myself available in case that kind of question came up. Seeing that we have Treasury folks here, I should say that I am probably going to be in large part mimicking things that they frequently say in these circumstances, so it wouldn't hurt my feelings if Kate Richardson or Chuck Smith were permitted to come to the table as well.
That was... the reason that we said we did to Mr. Evans is that we do have the Treasury here to testify on the bill, and it expedites the process if the chair orchestrates those things rather than. So if the Treasury Department, one or both of you, yes. Mr. Chuck Smith, is it? Yes. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Chuck Smith, and I'm Director of Debt Management for the Oregon State Treasury. We actually signed up to testify with respect to House Bill 3555. We're not really testifying about the substance, use, or purpose of this financing. What we really would like to talk about is the financing mechanism. This bill identifies revenue bonds as the financing mechanism to go ahead and accomplish certain hatchery capital projects as defined in the bill. We would urge that a reconsideration be given to the financing mechanism selection. The state has a more efficient kind of financing tool that would be available to this program if the legislature wishes to use it. It's a financing tool called Certificates of Participation. The state has used that tool for 14 years. It was implemented in 1989, and it was implemented as a general financing tool for state government because the state does not have a general purpose, general obligation bond. So it's a financing tool, it's effective, it's low cost. Currently, we have more than $800 million in COPs outstanding. More than two-thirds of COPs have been used for prison construction and youth facilities and so forth. It's a tool that's been widely used by a number of agencies, and in fact, I think Fish and Wildlife has already used it in the past. It's a tool that could bring low-cost, efficient economies of scale to financing needs that the legislature may determine that would be applicable to Fish and Wildlife. So we would urge that we not create small, inefficient revenue bond programs, but that the legislature take advantage of a well-tried and well-proven, low-cost and effective financing mechanism if they wish to finance these kind of projects. And I think that's sort of the bottom line.
I have one question here with that. Do we have, what's the upper limit on the certificate participation? Where are we at in terms of the state's ability to use certificates of participation? Sort of thing.
Mr. Chair, the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, which is a statutorily created commission, is responsible for taking a look at the capacity for each program in the state bonding program. They've also taken a look at the Certificates of Participation program. We have very substantial capacity, hundreds of millions of dollars, with respect to issuing these certificates of participation. It's all in a question, obviously, of the repayment source being identified ahead of time. So there's not a question of capacity. We've financed small projects from $1 million or $2 million with COPs up to $150 million for a prison. So there's a wide range. It's a flexible financing tool. It's in place. It's been used by a number of agencies. So it's really the way to go with if you're seeking a financing mechanism here.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Questions? I thought I saw Representative Tomei and then Representative Shoffert.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure to whom I should address the question, but I guess what I'm interested in is these monies are used now for something, and they will be used in the future to pay off this bond. So I guess, am I correct in assuming that?
That is an appropriate question for us to deal with. I think I see Ed Bowles in the audience,
and
I believe he would be a better source to ask that particular question.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I could go back and try to respond to the general question of how revenue bonds work, which I guess we didn't really do. Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, the revenue bond is a mechanism which allows the state to produce income without a conflict with the constitutional debt limit. We do not secure these with the full faith and credit of the state or the taxing power of the state. We commit a particular revenue stream to repayment of any proceeds received. In this case, it is the income from fishing tags and licenses. I'm not really familiar, and I think maybe, as you said, Mr. Bowles might be the better person to answer, but it sounded like I heard already this morning that that money is currently used for maintenance, so it sounds like the money would then be used to pay for these bonds, paying for maintenance and or modernization.
Thank you.
Okay. Other Representative Shaw?
No, they were taken care of. Thank you.
See? Representative Tomei is just there to lead the way for you.
She breaks the ground for us.
Always willing to do that.
Are there other questions from the group here? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And appreciate your coming down, Harrison. And Mr. Smith, appreciate your taking time on to be here for us.
Well, Mr. Chair.
And we are going to call next Mr. Bowles to address the questions as they kind of come before us here, and additionally to give us any other input that he may have on this particular bill.
Chair Jensen and members of the committee again, Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and once again I brought John Thorpe up, who's our Fish Propagation Program Manager. I'll first start with our brief prepared testimony, and then we can get into any other questions you may have. House Bill 3555, as you mentioned, would provide up to $20 million to the department for hatchery capital projects. Be paid from revenue bonds payable from fees received for licenses and tags to angle for fish. And as I mentioned earlier, we will be preparing more detailed information about our deferred maintenance and hatchery improvements in the Ways and Means document that's in draft now. Although we are neutral on this bill, just wanted to bring up a couple concerns that our agency has. We do not have a stable revenue source to pay the debt on bonds or certificates of participation. The 0305 governor's balanced budget supports a fee increase to continue the current program levels only. The debt over 15 to 20 years associated with this bill would require the department to reduce programs or request an increase to angling fees, depending on how it was determined to pay for the certificate of participation or for the bond. Issuance of bonds is a long-term commitment, and license fees are not necessarily a stable source of revenue due to fluctuations in fish available for angling. We appreciate the opportunity to provide these comments.
Representative Tomei, did that address your question?
If I may ask.
Yes.
Thank you. So,
the money now is used for upkeep. Is that correct on the fish on the hatcheries? The fees that would be used to pay off this debt. Am I correct?
Chair Jensen and Representative Tomei, the concept as I understand this is that in order to secure the bond or certificate of participation would require, you know, annual payments or biannual payments into that that would come from licensed dollars. Those would be have to come from somewhere. And we have annual maintenance costs right now. Those won't go away each year.
And that's those what the license fees are used for now. Is that correct?
Part
that's
of them, yes. We have much more license fees than just what we pay towards the deferred maintenance. And as John mentioned earlier, for you know, state dollars, it's about $200,000 per biennium. We also have R&E funds and others that go into that for a total of, as Mr. Evans mentioned, of about $2 million. Okay, and that money could go towards paying off the bond, as I understand it, but then that money would not be available for annual maintenance needs. While it was paying off
that's
the certificate.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
And that causes, we just brought that up as a concern, where those dollars to pay that off would come from, something that needs to be considered is all.
If I can follow up.
Follow up.
Is it analogous to someone buying a home? They're spending, say, $200 a month on rent. They're going to buy a home knowing that they've got that $200 a month that they pay for rent that will go instead into paying off their house. So at first that was analogous to me. But now I hear you saying that it would take more to pay, it would take money away from maintenance, ongoing maintenance to pay this off. Am I correct?
Chair Jensen and Representative Tomei, using that analogy, yes, the rent won't go away. It may be reduced a little bit, but we have continued maintenance needs that we have to. And all our agency is saying is that, you know, however this bill plays out, we need to make sure that our annual maintenance needs from here into the future aren't undermined, our ability to pay for those aren't undermined while we're paying for our deferred maintenance, which was from the past.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions for Mr. Bolt?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I guess I do.
Representative Shoffler.
I agree with the intent of this. I do. And I think my last vote reflects that. But if we did do something like this, would it eliminate? Clearly, maybe it would eliminate some of that deferred maintenance. Am I correct in thinking that? And then,
Chair Jensen and Representative Shoffler, the intent would be to clear the deferred maintenance piece of it, possibly in a fairly short time frame. But you'd be paying off the funds you borrowed to do that over a longer time frame into the future.
With the money you need every year to maintain what you have.
That's one possibility we would be concerned about if that came about.
Thank you. Just for your spirit.
If I could follow a little bit on that, Ed. And I understand, you know, what you're saying and what the principle here is. But it strikes me that at $2 million a year, whatever it is that your figure is right now, that you're constantly one step forward and two steps back. That the $2 million is not keeping up with the maintenance or getting ahead of the existing backlog that you have. And as a consequence, a number of the hatcheries are in jeopardy, perhaps of becoming so dysfunctional as to make them make the decision necessary on the department to close them. Before the consideration here is made on that, it seems that this part of the equation needs to be brought into the formula about the risks that we run if this additional revenue or revenue source is not used, because we're potentially, without some infusion, and I think more than potentially, without the infusion of a significant capital, running the risks that these facilities will become so obsolete as to be non-productive for us. And so in some ways you can't really use the rent argument, I guess, or the analogy there without considering or without adding this other in. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, yes. I don't want to imply that the money needed to pay for maintenance into the future is more important than taking care of our deferred maintenance issues. They're both kind of be biting us from both ends. I just want to make sure that the committee is aware that this approach may come at partial expense of another problem into the future, which would lead to deferred maintenance.
And then if we are to proceed down this road, and it leads to an increase in fees, angler fees or whatever it is, then of course we are asking that particular part of the community to pay the bill, or pay extra part of the bill to be able to finance or fund the certificates of participation / bonds, as the case may be.
Chair Jensen, as we understand it, it would either be potentially an increase in fees or a decrease in program of whatever that might be.
Okay. Somewhere or another, the use community is likely to have to pick up the tab.
That is correct.
On it. Effects. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes. May I just further this discussion with you?
Yeah.
So I hear you saying that it's important because these hatcheries are going to get to a point where they're not going to be able to keep up. They're going to be because of deferred maintenance. So this is probably a good idea because it will infuse a big amount of money into the hatcheries that can bring them up to date for the time being. And then if what Ed Bowles is suggesting happens in the future, that because the license fees are not a staple force of revenue and there will be other upkeep that will be deferred, money that is going now to that upkeep, but that would be going instead to pay off the certificates, am I following myself? So the legislature would have the potential of raising fees to cover both the certificate and or the deferred maintenance.
If the legislature didn't allow the raising of fees, then it would would mandate that the department cut something in some other place. I mean, if they can't stretch their budget far enough, they must either cut something or get new revenue sources based on this. Is that
That's correct, Chair Jensen, and it wouldn't be so much as if we can't stretch our budget. We can't. It would, to pay off the certificate would come either at the expense of program or require new fees, or the third option would be to not do any maintenance, annual maintenance, so you'd have deferred maintenance accruing immediately after you wipe the slate clean. And so those are just things need to be considered.
Is that, I think you're putting words in my mouth as far as supporting the, or not supporting. I'm trying to make sure we understand,
right,
what we're playing with when we, before we support or don't support,
right,
the issue. So, questions? You okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two final people to testify on this bill. We'd like to hear them. And in light of the time, and appreciating that they may not be on the same side of the issue, we'd like them to both come up, if you would, Les and Dennis, Mr. Ritchie and Mr. Helgeson.
Mr. Chair, we could have Representative Dingfelder go sit between them to make sure that.
Please. Okay, I've got short arms. I'll sit on this side. Go ahead, Les.
Les.
Thank you, Chair Jensen.
Could you try to keep it brief?
I certainly will.
Thank you.
Since Mr. Schaffler has left, I wanted to thank him for his high regard of pure-blood Norwegians. Anyway, I'm representing Native Fish Society here on House Bill 3555, and we have some concerns about this. I'm not a financial expert in myself, but I am self-employed and know a little bit about business. I regularly consult with a financial consultant. In fact, my brother-in-law is a broker on Wall Street, and I look at this bill, and it really raises some red flags in terms of the debt. We're mortgaging all of our fees in the event these bonds fail. I can appreciate there's the I'm seeing an alternative being the certificate of participation, which I'm not real familiar with. But we're potentially giving away the entire ship here by mortgaging our fees for this. Now, we need some way to pay for this, which I understand from Mr. Bowles' testimony. We really don't have that now. It's going to be at the expense of programs. And I would prefer that we see a priority list first and take care of some of the more important hatcheries on the ghost. Again, the LC is a good example. An example of a hatchery we probably don't need is Cedar Creek Hatchery. As I said before, we've got plenty of wild fish there to support the fisheries. So we need to establish some priorities and not just rampantly try to save every single hatchery here. But my primary concerns are the debt we're being put into here. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry. Coach Ritchie.
Dennis Ritchie, Oregon Anglers, Westland. For the record, I'd like to read a recommendation from the book that I'm going to supply to the committee. And this basically has to do about the argument between wild fish and using brood stock, and the argument that Les uses quite frequently is based on a 1986 experiment by Mark Chilcote on the Skamania River. And he demonstrated that actually it was on the Klamath River with Skamania steelhead. And he demonstrated that Skamania steelhead, a much diverged, non-local, and putatively domesticated fish, were able to spawn successfully under natural conditions. Given the importance of the temporal specificity, it was remarkable, in spite of the broodstock having been purposely advanced 3 months in spawning time over the previous 30 years, and then translocated to a different stream, these fish were still able to show a significant level of spawner-to-spawner reproductive success in totally different environment. Basically, what these scientists are saying, by looking at the Chilcote report, Mark Chilcote came out and said broodstock did not successfully spawn, their returning fish did not successfully spawn like the wild fish. Well, he was, again, comparing apples and oranges, and he didn't even take into consideration that the broodstock that he looked at the time that the native Klamath fish were spawning, those broodstock had been set back 3 months intentionally by the hatcheries, the spawning time. It was marvelous that they were spawning at all 3 months out of their natural timing in a place that was not geographically suited to their environment to begin with, to their genetic adaptation. So that report is the one that they use time and time again to point out that using broodstock in hatcheries is a poor practice. It was poor science to begin with. Just a couple other comments about the Radke report that you were given about hatcheries. Hans Radke is an economist for hire. He was commissioned, I believe, by Oregon Trout, but I could be corrected as to that. But the economic report was definitely set out to prove a point.
and its objectivity has been questioned by many other economists. Basically, Hans Radke usually works for the commercial fishermen back in the times when the commercial fishermen and the sports fishermen were always at odds fighting each other for quotas. And it's gotten to the point that the commercial fishermen and the sports fishermen now are working much closely together, and you know, a lot of those arguments are moot. NOAA Fisheries is not of one mind. That's why it's taken them so darn long to come out with their hatchery policy. According to Bob Lawn, their biologists are split about 50-50 on whether hatchery fish can be used to regenerate native runs. And I'd like to end up with Bill Bakke's comment, as was printed in Oregonian and given to Joe Rojas about 2 weeks ago. Mr. Bakke said that without hatchery fish, there would be a whole lot of river basins out there with no salmonoids in them. Representative Kropf, Salem, Portland, and Eugene benefit a great deal from hatchery production. That's where all the boat manufacturers sell their products. That's where probably 80% of the tackle is sold that's sold in the state. I personally have spent on my $25,000 boat, which is just a little puddle jumper compared to most of those out there in the Willamette. I've spent a lot of money in the metropolitan area.
Point well taken. Thank you.
By North River, they're really good boats.
Okay.
You don't have stock in them, do you, Representative?
He's a neighbor of mine.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair, might I offer just a brief 30-second comment?
I'm counting.
Okay. Mr. Bakke's statements were taken entirely out of context. I'm on the board of directors of Native Fish Society. Believe me, I know what Mr. Bakke meant when he made that statement. Furthermore, I believe we were called up here to comment on House Bill 3555. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. You should have said that.
I asked what that had to do with the bill, but
it's okay.
I think we need to move on.
And by the way, Hans Radke was commissioned by the governor, too.
So, yeah. Okay, thank you. I would like to ask Mr. Smith if he would come back and answer one little short question for me. Oh, what kind, and I need your name again, of course, but what type of debt load do we pick up with a $20 million COPS? How much do we have to raise per year?
Mr. Chair, I'm Chuck Smith with the Oregon State Treasury. To borrow $20 million for a 20-year period in today's current interest rates, I just did an estimate sitting out there, so it's not to the dollar, but it would be about $1.5 to $1.6 million per year debt service. So $3 to $3.2 million per biennium.
$3 to $3.2 per biennium.
Per biennium.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Representative Shoffler.
That's with revenue bonds or certificate.
Well, that's taking the cheapest route we could go.
Okay.
It would be what I would want to proposing.
I was thinking certificates of participation because that's our recommendation if the legislature chooses to do this.
If we choose to spend more money, it's our fault.
It usually is, Mr. Chair.
Colleagues, I'd like to do a work session on this, but I'd also like to have a couple of questions answered, and we're up against some time on it, so I'm simply going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 3555, and I'm going to open public hearing on House Bill 3431, close public hearing on 3431, open a public hearing on 2800, close a public hearing on House Bill 2800, open a public hearing on House Bill 3407, close public hearing on House Bill 3407, open a public hearing on House Bill 3438, close a public hearing on House Bill 3438, open a public hearing on House Bill 3477, close a public hearing on House Bill 3477, open a public hearing on House Bill 3519, close a public hearing on House Bill 3519. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3597. Close a public hearing on House Bill 3597. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3598. Close a public hearing on House Bill 3598. And with no other items, we need to enter into the record the Save the Salmon Coalition testimony, written testimony on House Bill 3249. And with that, our agenda is completed for today. And thank you very much, colleagues, for your early to late arrival, as the case might be, and for your patience to stay with me for another 10 minutes or so here to get through our agenda. We are adjourned.